Mm-hmm. This land is yours. This land is mine. From California to New York, from the redwood forest to the stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Hello, everybody. This is Basma Firehat with the People Speak. Please join us in Pal Talk by going to www.paltalk.com and downloading and installing the software and creating a nickname. Or you can listen to us on our new network, CWRN, at www.cosmicwavesradio.com. Our guest tonight is really a hero of mine, Professor Howard Zinn. He's a historian, and he's best known for his work, The People's History of the United States. But he's also recently written another a companion volume, Voices of the People, history book, and we'll be back to talk with him in just a moment, right after these public service announcements.
Hello, this is Carrie Minaj, sound technician for the People Speak radio show. You're listening to us on a Cosmic Waves radio network at cosmicwavesradio.com, or you're listening to us in the Pal Talk room. Please visit PalTalk at www.paltalk.com.
This is Howard Zinn. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war and lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, produced false news reports, imprisoned without charge, and tortured, targeted civilians, and used illegal weapons. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor House Resolution 635 for an investigation.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
Hello, Professor Zinn. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Welcome to our show.
Well, I'm glad to have you.
I have to tell you, Professor, this is a promise that I made to our producer, Mike, who along with me is one of your biggest fans, and he told me to relay this statement to you. His statement, and this is a direct quote, is, "To hell with movie stars, politicians, and Nobel Peace Prize laureates. I'd die happy if our only guest ever was Howard Zinn." And he went on to, this guy is really a fan of yours. He really is. We all are.
Yeah,
and you will find that the group here in this not at all. I think I know for a fact that Mike meant every word of it. He's a very passionate young man.
Well, thank him for me.
Well, he's listening to you right now, sir.
Yeah. I don't get too many reactions like that, so I'm very happy.
Well, I guess liberalism isn't exactly the most popular thing in the country these days. Professors, then, tell us about the Voices of People's History.
Yeah, well, the Voices of People's History is something that I and Anthony Arnold did together. He's a friend of mine and an editor, and the two of us decided that my book, A People's History of the United States, has in it some sort of many little quotations and little musings and letters, excerpts of speeches and so on. And we decided that those particular things in people's history were important enough to expand on. And so we'd have a book just completely of the voices of people and not just, you know, my narrative as there is in the people's history, but, you know, the speeches of Frederick Douglass, the journals of Bartolomé de las Casas, the speech by Helen Keller, songs by Bob Dylan and Bruce Springsteen, poems by Langston Hughes. So, you know, a variety of voices, but not the voices of the elite, not the voices of the founding fathers, of the presidents and generals and industrialists, but the voices of ordinary people, or who are extraordinary, and extraordinary people who generally are left out of the traditional textbooks because they're dissenters, they're radicals, they're socialists, they're anarchists, they're anti-war. And so these are the voices, the dissident voices in American history, the voices of the people that we put together in this book, which is all about, 600, 700 pages long, and there's sort of 200 passages in it. And we have, what we've done in the last year, 2 years, we've had readings from the book, readings of some of these passages with very well-known actors and artists reading. We've had, we only did one in L.A. recently. We had Viggo Mortensen reading. We've had Alice Walker reading. We had Kurt Vonnegut reading. We had Marissa Tomei and Kerry Washington and Sandra Oh. And we found that people in the arts who very often don't get a chance to express themselves on the important issues that they care about. Because, you know, people in the arts, with actors and so on, are very often the victims of whatever play or movie, you know, somebody writes for them or directs for them. So here was a chance for them to speak something that was close to their heart, and they did.
What an amazing sounding book. As a poet, I understand that many times through our art, we say things that can't possibly be presented any other way, really. So I understand exactly what you mean when you say that that these are voices of what professor. What drives you towards this end? What drives you towards this peaceful, this method of living your life that uses peaceful resolution of conflict?
Oh, well, what makes me do what I do?
That's about it.
That's about it. It's a very important question. That question could be asked of everybody in the world, right? You know, what is it that makes you do what you do? In my case, I think growing up in a working class family, and by the way, I might say an immigrant family, just to tell you where I stand about rights of immigrants. And
so am I. So you know where I stand as well.
Yes. So growing up in a working class family, becoming a shipyard worker at the age of 18. You know, rather than going to college, and then being in the Air Force and being in the war, dropping bombs on various cities in Europe, and then going to college under the GI Bill, and then teaching my first real teaching job in a black women's college in the South, Spelman College, and for 7 years, and being involved in the civil rights movement. And then coming north and being involved in the anti-war movement against the Vietnam War. So all of these factors, all of these experiences, I think have led me to do what I'm doing. And what do? So I write, I speak, I go to demonstrations, and because I feel alive when I'm doing those things. If I only stayed home and had to watch our political leaders on television, I would feel dead.
Well, I'm glad then that you have remained alive and well throughout your experience, because you have been you've been like a rooted tree in the lives of, I think, a lot of people, because you've always been there. You've always spoken the same words. You've always directed your life in the same path. And I think sometimes as we grow and as we experience different parts of history, different parts of politics, and we see the differences through the years, sometimes I think a lot of us have lost their path. And we see people like you, and we always know that we can go back to the solid foundation of what you teach. May I ask you, what do you mean by when you say nonviolent direct action? And, Professor, how does this kind of action actually work in the real world?
Well, the expression nonviolent direct action is an expression I like to use because if you just talk about nonviolence and leave it at that, then people get the impression of passivity. People get the impression that, oh, you're just going to, be a quiet person. You're not going to commit violence. But also, you don't get the impression of action. The Martin Luther King and the young people in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in the South, their motto was not simply nonviolence. Their motto was nonviolent direct action, which means that you don't initiate violence, but at the same time, you're not passive. You take action. You sit in a lunch counter. You march in a demonstration. You go on a freedom ride. You do something. You don't commit violence against people, but you do something, and maybe something that violates the law. It may be an act of civil disobedience, but it's an act which is intended to bring your point of view, your issue, to the attention of the community and of the country. The actions in the civil rights movement were examples of nonviolent direct action. This labor movement, the history of the labor movement, is a history of nonviolent direct action. A strike is nonviolent direct action. That is, what do strikers do? They stop work. They're not killing anybody. They're not doing damage to any human beings. They're nonviolent, but they're not passive. They're very dramatic actions intended to bring pressure on people who have an effect on their lives. And we've seen historically how nonviolent direct action has brought about results and has changed things, has brought about reforms. The labor movement is an example of it. The idea of nonviolent direct action is to substitute for the inaction of the political system. Because the political system, the thing that is presented to us in junior high school is democracy. That is, the three branches of government, Congress, President, mm-hmm. Supreme Court. That has never been effective in rectifying any injustice. And therefore, the working people never found that the government would give them the eight-hour day. They had to do it themselves by engaging in direct action, by going on strike, by facing police and facing National Guardsmen. And similarly with the black people in the South, the government was not going to enforce the 14th Amendment, was not going to end racial segregation. Black people had to do it themselves. And the same thing is true of the movement against the war in Vietnam. While some people may point to a few isolated acts of violence, the fact is that the anti-war movement was almost totally a nonviolent movement, but it involved so many people, and it involved resistance to the war in nonviolent ways. I mean, a GI who refuses to fight is engaging in nonviolent direct action. A GI who runs away from the military and speaks out against the war is engaging in nonviolent direct action. But those are the actions that helped stop the war in Vietnam.
Well, as a pacifist myself, we've often, and I know for a fact that we are often mistaken our passivism is mistaken for passivity, and which is just not true. Let me ask you, what are some of your favorite forms? I mean, obviously, we're not dealing with the same type of violence that the blacks during the civil rights era had to deal with. We are, however, dealing with issues that are I believe are profoundly affecting the rights of the constituency here in the United States. What are some of the actions that we can take to indeed show that we are not passive, but we are pacifists that are willing to take the action?
Well, you take the war and take the military machine. We've had a number of daring actions by pacifists. Many of them really inspired by religious teachings, but some of them not inspired by religious teachings. But they have, ever since the end of the Vietnam War, they have gone into places where nuclear weapons are being manufactured. They've poured blood on nuclear weapons. They've been sentenced to jail. In other words, they've committed acts of civil disobedience to dramatize their opposition to militarism. I mean, they've gone to recruiting stations. I mean, look at just recently. Maybe you read something about the grannies, the older women who went to block a recruiting station to express their protest against the Iraq War. That was nonviolent direct action. The hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people who demonstrated recently for the rights of immigrants, just marching through the streets and waving banners and you know, calling attention to themselves in a way that could not be ignored, that was another way of engaging in nonviolent direct action. So there are many, many different ways.
Just get out and do something, basically.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be something heroic. And, a lot of people think, you have to do something heroic and dramatic. No, most people are not ready to do that. There's a small number of people will do that. But you can certainly join a group in your neighborhood. You can be part of a vigil that stands on the street corner with a sign, and the traffic that goes by sees your sign, and your sign says, end the war. Or support the troops, bring them home, and you're doing your little bit.
I hope all of our listeners are listening to this. Get out and do something. Make a sign. Professor Zinn said so. Professor, since you are a historian and you base a lot of your life's work on history and how it reflects in today's society, if you were to pick a time in history that America seriously started to go wrong, what time would that be and why?
I'd pick right after the American Revolution. By that I mean the Founding Fathers. The Founding Fathers set the nation off on basically the path that it has been on for a long time. And that path is a path in which the government operates on behalf of the wealthy. The legislation that's passed is legislation that helps the wealthy. From the beginning, the government was a government of slaveholders and of merchants and would send the troops out against people who dissented or rebelled. So from that point on, establishing a government that would quell rebellions and that at that time supported slavery, that already set us on the wrong course.
The tone.
Now, you might say that, there was a distinct, I suppose, jump in this tendency to support the interests of the wealthy. Distinct jump when the nation became an imperial nation. In other words, around the beginning of the 20th century, You know, when the United States moved into Cuba, when the United States fought a very bloody war in the Philippines against the Filipinos, and then moved into Central America and occupied Haiti and Dominican Republic, and well, you know, we've been all through the 20th century, we've been an interventionist nation, an imperial nation, and so I suppose, you know, my first answer to your question would be, yeah, right after the revolution. My second answer would be, well, the turn of the century, when we started to become a marauding power across the world, not bringing democracy to people, but generally bringing a dictatorship and pain and suffering to a lot of people all over the world.
I definitely understand. And I can see how, in fact, it would have. How else could it have worked? I have a ton of more questions for you. It's like, oh my God, I got Professor Howard Zinn right in my own clutches, and 1 hour is not enough. But we do have to break for a moment, and we'll be back in just we have another PSA announcement. Go ahead. Technical man, do your thing.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who are forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Pal Talk is the largest and most popular internet chat community in the world, with over 39 million registered users worldwide. There are approximately 4 million active users and between 30 and 70,000 people using PalTalk at any given time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The PalTalk support staff cover 32 basic languages and countless dialects. PalTalk is pretty much comparable to any major city in the world, the virtual online equivalent of a global community.
Are you appalled that our country is spending billions on war while cutting funds for our libraries, hospitals, and schools? Are you heartsick at the suffering of the Iraqi people? Then join me, Medea Benjamin, in signing Code Pink's urgent call for peace in Iraq. Sign on today at www.womensaynotowar.org.
Well, welcome back. We have been talking with our esteemed guest, Professor Howard Zinn, the noted author of The People's History of the United States and a companion volume called The Voices of the People's History. Hello, Professor. Welcome back, and thank you for joining us here on Pal Talk Radio and CWRN, Cosmic Wave Radio Network. We are really honored to have you here. Professor Zinn, you, and I'm going to quote you here, if those in charge of our society, politicians, corporate executives, and owners of press and television can dominate our ideas, they will be secure in their power. They will not need soldiers patrolling the streets. We will control ourselves. I am a firm believer that there is an element of social engineering going on in not only American politics, but in politics in general. Do you agree? And how do we combat something like that? How do we combat something as insidious as being programmed by television and media? It's just a profound arena of a literal brainwashing. So how do you combat that?
You know, I think that's an interesting point. You know, that because we've always contrasted what we call totalitarian states, you know, police states, with armed soldiers on the streets, and we've always contrasted that with, you know, our democracy, where we have freedom of press and freedom of speech and so on. But in fact, if your press is dominated by powerful corporations, if your television stations are monopolized by a few multinational corporations, you know, in other words, if the culture, if the ideas that are presented to you in society are the ideas that come from a very privileged group, then they don't need to send soldiers into the streets to control you. You will control yourself. You will internalize the ideas that go against your own interests. Well, so what do you do about that? Well, there's no easy answer, except that you have to become conscious of the way you are manipulated. That's the first step. You have to realize that the information that you get is not simply objective, neutral information. You've got to realize that CBS and ABC and NBC and Fox and CNN, they're not giving you unbiased information. They're giving you information which serves the interests of the establishment. Once you understand that behind the information that you get are very specific interests, and that these interests are not your interests, then you've taken the first step. Then you have to look for sources of information that are independent, that are different, that you can rely on. And that's not easy. One thing you have to do is, instead of looking at television, go to the library. Learn history. History is an antidote to so much of what you get in the media and from the government. You know, if the government monopolizes the airwaves and tells you that we must go to war because this country is a threat to us, because we want to spread democracy around the world, if you don't have any history, you will believe that. If you know history, you will know how many times the government has told the same thing to the American people, how many times, going back to the Mexican War and the Spanish-American War, the Philippine War, and World War One and the Vietnam War, you'll know how many times the government has said we must go to war for democracy, for liberty. And if you know that history, then you have immunized yourself against the lies that are being told to you by the media and by the government. So you look for independent sources of information. You read alternative magazines and newspapers. You read the Nation. You read the Progressive. You read In These Times. You read Z Magazine. You read Harper's Magazine. You listen to Democracy Now. You listen to Pacifica Radio. You listen to stations like yours, where you can get information that's not available on the major media. You look for community newspapers. It's not easy. Go to the internet and find out things on the internet that do not appear in the newspapers. Look for the foreign press, because the foreign press will tell you things that the American press will not tell you. You know, Agence France-Presse and from France and the Guardian of London or the Independent you listen to Al Jazeera, listen to the voices from the Middle East, listen to as many alternate voices as you can so you can make up your own mind.
We have one of our virtual audience members that just put into the text, the internet is a bad source. Just listen to Fox News. I think that's a little bit, I think that's cute. Professor, there was a poll done of over 500 historians in which 80% of them voted that President George W. Bush was the worst president in U.S. history. First of all, let me ask you: Were you polled by this this organization? And if you were, do you agree? And if you didn't, and if you weren't polled by them, What are your thoughts, in your in-depth thoughts, on the actions and the presence of George W. Bush as our administrator?
Oh, wow. Well, no, I wasn't polled. I think that the polls sort of make it a point not to talk to me. but I'm glad you're polling me. Finally, I found somebody who will poll me. And
I'll poll you anytime, dear.
Thank you. Well, I would agree with the 80% of the historians who say that. I'm amazed that it's only 80%. where are the minds of those 20%? definitely the worst president we ever had. And that's saying a lot, because we have had, you know, we've had a lot of very, very bad presidents. I mean, as I said before, starting with the founding fathers, you know, generally the leaders of this country have served the interests of the rich. And this is true whether they've been Democrats or Republicans. The fact that the Bush administration is the worst administration in history should not sort of blind us to the fact that both Democrats and Republicans have gotten us into war. Both Democrats and Republicans have maintained tax structures which benefit the rich. After all, Clinton, take Clinton, who now looks like an angel, you know, to George Bush. You know, of course, a lot of people would resent me calling Clinton an angel. but what I'm saying is that compared to Bush, suddenly everybody looks good, but they don't deserve to look good because very often they follow the same policies. Clinton, for instance, when he was president in his second term, he raised this specter of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He did it years before George Bush did. Now, he didn't take us to war because of that, but he did bomb Iraq because of that, because he kept talking about weapons of mass destruction. And, you know, both Democratic and Republican presidents have maintained a huge military budget, some more than others. And, yes, Bush is the worst, and Bush is the most dangerous. But I think it's important to understand that simply electing another Democrat may not change policy. Hillary Clinton, for instance, supported every major Bush agenda, supported the war, supported the Patriot Act. So if the Democrats put up as candidate somebody like Hillary Clinton, we are not going to have much choice. The argument for Bush being the worst is simply Bush has gotten us into two wars in a very short time. Now that Bush has ignored international law, he's violated the UN Charter. I mean, he's violated law after law. He's ignoring the Geneva Conventions. He's refusing to sign international agreements. And by the way, he's not the first. You know that the Clinton administration also did not go along with the idea of an international criminal court. Exactly. You know, so, but Bush certainly has taken things to a more dangerous turn than anybody else has. And the very idea that somebody like Bush is sitting on 10,000 nuclear weapons is a very horrifying thought. And therefore, the sooner we get this administration out of office, the better. I think the sooner people talk about impeaching Bush, the better off we will be, because our political process, unfortunately, doesn't allow us to do anything except every 4 years. And the only way to get around that, because after all, a president can do a lot of damage in those 4 years, the only way to deal with that is when a president so crassly violates the rights of people, as Bush has done, so blatantly squeezes money out of the taxpayer and gives it to the rich and gives it to the military-industrial complex. When the president does that, then it is time to impeach him. And I'm hoping that more and more people in the country will raise the cry, impeach Bush. Let's get rid of this administration. impeach Bush, impeach Cheney. We'll go right down.
Impeach them all. I agree with you, and you will not find a lot of people in this virtual auditorium and in our listening audience that will absolutely agree with you. You know, I could listen to this for hours. We do have to take a station break with Carrie, and I see in our virtual audience dozens of hands up, so I'm afraid, and they're all clamoring to get to the microphone to ask you questions, Professor. So we'll be taking a brief break. Carrie will take us into our announcements, and then right after that we'll be taking audience questions.
Okay, fine.
Hello, this is Carrie Minaj, sound technician for the People Speak Radio Show. You're listening to us on the Cosmic Waves Radio Network at CosmicWavesRadio.com, or you're listening to us in the PalTalk room. Please visit PalTalk at www.paltalk.com.
Thank you, Carrie. Welcome back, everyone, with Professor Howard Zinn, a noted historian and a man for the people. And as you can see, our title, Professor Zinn, is The People Speak. And when the people speak, things happen and people listen. Our first question is coming from Wolf Dancer. Wolf Dancer, and I'm going to ask everyone to make their comments, their questions brief. We have a lot of hands up, and we'd like to get as many of our audience in as possible. So, Wolf Dancer, could you come to the mic, give us your first name and where you are calling from, and a brief question for the professor.
Hi, I'm Mark from Pittsburgh, and it's an honor to be in this room with you, professor. I'm a child of the 60s. I was in Vietnam. I come home and protested the war. My question is this. Do you think what's happening now is worse than what happened in Vietnam within the government, within the war? And what can we do to get people out on the street and get involved to stop what's going on and really take care of this government and do all that stuff that we need to do to become a country again? Thank you.
Go ahead, Professor.
So Mark, yes. It's a very important question, and it's hard to compare the situation now, the situation in Vietnam. I mean, that was a very, very bad situation. And, in terms of numbers of people killed and so on, after all, we killed several million people in Vietnam and 58,000 Americans. We haven't reached that point in this war yet, and I certainly hope we never even get close to that point. But that shouldn't delude us about the fact that we are in the hands of a group of very ruthless men who simply not paying any attention to international law, to the wishes of the American people. After all, most Americans now, 60 to 65% of Americans want us to get out of Vietnam, out of Iraq. And when it reached that point in the United States, then the government had to move and get out, but the Bush administration seems determined to stay with. What can we do? I think we just have to do what we have been doing. We have to educate the American people. We have to spread information. We have to bring home, I think, to the American people the fact that we are bringing disaster to Iraq. Because the media has not done an adequate job of showing how we have destroyed that country, how many people we have killed there, how many just ordinary Iraqis, not Saddam Hussein, not members of Saddam Hussein's government, just ordinary Iraqis have suffered, how many of them have been rounded off simply on suspicion, how many of their homes have been destroyed. The American people have not been given an accurate picture of that, just as the American people have not given an accurate picture of the Americans, the soldiers, who have not died, but who have lost a leg or an arm or their eyesight, who have been mutilated by this war. and also having given an accurate picture of the mental damage that's been done to the soldiers in Iraq. And so many of them have come back from Iraq with difficulties, or very serious psychological difficulties. So it's a matter, I think, of getting information to the American people that the major media is keeping from them. That's a process. There's no dramatic one-shot thing you can do. It's a process of all of us doing whatever we can to spread the word, to educate people, to tell people what we know, and to protest wherever we can, and get the signs out and get the vigils going. I mean, there are vigils going in hundreds and hundreds of American cities now, and that's all to the good. And the fact that the country has already moved from 75% support of the war to 60-65% against the war, and that shows that even the little things that people have done have an effect. And I think also, I think what we have to do is to go into the high schools and talk to young people who are the victims of recruiting officers, and the recruiting officers who will entice them into the military with promises of education and will propagandize them about how they're going to, you know, do something for their country. But going into the schools, talking to young people, informing them about the war, telling them, no, they're not doing this for their country, they're doing it for a small group of people who are profiting politically, economically from the war. There's a lot for us to do.
Thank you, Professor. Very interesting. And that just goes right back to nonviolent direct action. Get out there and do it. Whatever it is, just do it. Our next question is from Derry. Derry, your name, where you're calling from, and a brief question for Professor Howard Zinn.
Thank you, Basima. Good evening, Professor Zinn. I'm very pleased to be here tonight. I was listening this afternoon to your CD, Artists in a Time of War, and you pointed out during specific times in history that certain artists spoke out against the government. And what my question is, why don't we see more well-known people doing this today? It's a very, very critical time in history for the United States and for the world, yet people seem to be more silent than usual. Is this because they're afraid? So that's my question, and thank you very much.
Well, you know, of course I agree with you, we need more voices speaking out, but at the same time we shouldn't be discouraged, because there are a lot of people in the arts who have been speaking out, and very prominent people with great followings. I think of Ani DiFranco, for instance, whose song started this program. I think of Bruce Springsteen. I think of Eddie Vedder, who has this, he and Pearl Jam, his band, have this enormous following of young people, and he's been very outspoken against the Bush administration and the war. I think of the Dixie Chicks, who've been very brave in holding to their position and refusing to be intimidated, even though, you know, the people who control the radio stations are trying to cut them out of the radio programs. So, you know, there are a lot of people in the arts who are speaking out. And as I said earlier in the program, when we have had our events in which we've had readings from history of dissenting voices, we have found so many people in the arts and in literature who have been willing to come onto the public platform and speak their minds. And Kurt Vonnegut and Alice Walker and James Earl Jones and Marissa Tomei and Kerry Washington, people like that, and Viggo Mortensen. So I'm encouraged, actually, by the number of people who have done this. I mean, Jane Fonda, who did this during the Vietnam War, and speaks out again against this war. So we mustn't be discouraged by the fact that not everybody is speaking out, but more and more people are.
Thank you, Professor. Our next question is going to come from Mesta, who is one of our website coordinators. And right after Mesta, we're going to be taking a quick break to do our contest for the evening for our DVD. So, Mesta, if you will come to the microphone, give Professor Zinn your first name and where you're calling from, and your brief question, and you can get back to work and get ready for the contest. Go ahead, Mesta.
Okay, can I be heard? I think I can. Let me get my volume there. Professor Zinn.
Yes.
How do we, as Americans, stop the activities that is occurring under the Bush administration? What is your suggestion to handcuff the administration to stop these violations of the Constitution? And what are your options, Professor? Come up almost like a double-edged sword here. Another question is, could you discuss, if you would, the United States relationship with Israel, and how do you feel about that, sir? Thank you.
The two questions: one about the what do we do about violations of the Constitution, and the other is about the, how I feel about American policy with regard to Israel. On the question of violations of the Constitution, the fact that there are the government is doing its best to intimidate people, to keep tabs on them, to tap into their wires, to threaten them. So the best defense against that is for people not to be intimidated, for people to continue speaking out, for people to defy whatever the government does to control people. I mean, I'm thinking of, for instance, the librarians who refused to turn over records which the Justice Department wanted. The Justice Department wanted to do records of the people who were taking out books from the library to see what books they were taking out, to see if any of those books would be dangerous. There are librarians who simply refused to do this. The more we speak out, the more we encourage other people to speak out. The government, when it takes away our constitutional rights, is doing this in order to intimidate us and to silence us. So the best defense against silence is simply to refuse to be silent and to speak out in every way we can, even louder than before. On your second question about American policy to Israel, well, you know, this has been a very serious situation that the United States, which has had the power to put pressure on Israel, to do the right thing, meaning to stop its occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, stop the occupation of Palestinian territory. And the United States, instead of using the economic pressure that it can use, because after all, the United States has been giving huge sums of money to Israel. Israel is very much dependent economically on the United States. If the United States were to tell Israel, now look, you'd better get out of the occupied territories, or else we are going to withhold our economic aid. If Israel had been told this, you can be sure that Israel would get out of the occupied territories because they're so dependent on American economic aid. So instead of doing this, instead of using its power and its pressure to bring about a just solution in the Middle East, the United States has encouraged Israel to maintain its hold over the occupied territories. It's encouraged Israel by continuing to give Israel an enormous amount of military and economic aid. So, you know, I think that it requires the American people to become more educated about the situation. in Israel. Just as I was saying before, how it's important for the American people to learn what is really happening to the Iraqi people, how they are suffering under American occupation. It's very important for the American people to learn how the Palestinians are suffering under the Israeli occupation. During World War II, we were fighting against the occupation of Europe by Hitler. We were opposed to one country occupying another country. And now here we are supporting occupations, supporting the Israeli occupation of Palestinian land, and of course supporting our own occupation of Iraq. And I think that more and more Americans should become aware of this, and more Americans should put pressure on the American government to change its policy.
Well, thank you, Professor Zinn. A question near and dear to my heart as an immigrant from the state of Palestine to the United States and a proud citizen of the United States, I thank you for your unbiased and honest opinion on this. We're going to take a break now, guys. I'm trying to get to everybody as quickly as we can, but sorry, folks, we may not get to everybody, but tonight's giveaway is the Peace DVD. It's a film by Gabriella Zamparini and Lorenzo Meccola, which gives a look at the 21st century peace movement through interviews, discussions, and comments about the Iraqi war, terrorism, September 11, and other topics, with notables such as Gore Vidal, Amnesty International, Susan Sarandon, Pete Seeger, Amy Goodman, Angela Davis, Pacifica Radio Network, Noam Chomsky, and our venerable guest this evening, Howard Zinn. Now, is everybody ready for the question? The way this works is the first audience member to type in text the answer to this question is the winner of the video, or the DVD. I'm sorry, I'm dating myself here, aren't I? Okay, here it goes. Get ready, everybody. Get your texting fingers on. Our question for the evening: what is the name of the film in which Matt Damon, playing a genius delinquent, tells his counselor, played by Robin Williams, that the People's History of the United States is a book that will blow his mind? Okay, Mesta, whoever it is, please contact, Mesta will announce the winner, or I will announce the winner as soon as Mesta tells me who the winner is, and we will need you to PM Mesta, and she will get your information so that we can send the winner the DVD. We have a few more minutes, and I know there are people. I would love to talk to you forever and ever, but there are people that are really dying to get to ask you a question, Professor. The next question will come from that guy, 222. That guy, can you please come to the mic, give us your first name and where you're calling from, and a brief question for the professor.
Hello, Francisco here from Fall River. What is your opinion on the incredible apathy by all Americans? The examples are Barbara Bush's statement on Katrina, secret prisons, wrongful imprisonment, wiretapping, 14 months to begin all investigations on 9/11, and the Hamas Democratic voting not being recognized by Bush. Thank you.
It's interesting how so many people are talking about apathy, and of course, to me, the greatest degree of apathy is the Bush administration, which is cold to all of these things. I think while a lot of American people are not doing anything about all of this, I don't think that we should therefore assume, because they're not doing anything, that they're not aware of what's going on. There's more and more awareness of what's happening. And we can see this by the public opinion polls. We can see this by the fact that, the favorable ratings for Bush have gone down to 30%. And And this has been a change over several years. So whatever apathy there has been declining. More and more people are becoming aware. But it's very easy to mistake inaction for apathy, because very often people know what's going on, are aware, are troubled by it, but they don't know what to do. They don't feel that they have any power. They feel impotent, and therefore they don't do anything. And because they don't do anything, you get the feeling they don't care, they're apathetic. You know, the job of people who really are concerned about what's going on, our job is to move people from a kind of passive knowledge of what's going on to action. And the best way to do that is by example, by doing things ourselves, and by letting more and more people be encouraged by what they see other people do. And this is how social movements have always grown. Nothing heroic, nothing, you know, very exciting, dramatic necessarily, but persistent opposition, persistent acts, even small acts, that which multiply and multiply. And at certain points in history, they reach the point where the government must pay attention. We've seen this historically. So that in the civil rights movement in the South, so that in the movement against the war in Vietnam, we saw it with disabled people who for years tried to get the government to pass legislation for their rights, and they persisted, 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 and finally something happened. So it's a matter of patience, persistence, and not being discouraged.
Thank you, Professor. If I'm not mistaken, we have a winner, and the winner is Inner Journey. Inner Journey has won the DVD, and Inner Journey, if you would please contact Mesta and PMs either now or after the show and give her your information, and she'll be sure to get the DVD out to you. And congratulations. Really good work. Our next question is from Peace Lover. Peace Lover happens to be the producer of our show, and he's the young man that first made the statement when we started the show, and I think he probably has a little bit more gushing. Go right ahead, Peace Lover. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and gush away.
Oh, no, no gushing. Thank you for coming on the show, Professor Zinn. Professor Zinn, 1992 or 1, Freedom of Information Act, revealed that the United States provoked the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Is 9/11 another Pearl Harbor? Did this country, do you think, or in your opinion, or from what you've seen, did President Bush duplicate what Franklin Delano Roosevelt did and use 9/11 as an excuse for a preemptive invasion and occupation of Iraq? Thank you.
Well, that's a very serious question of history. In the case of the United States and Japan, there's no doubt that the United States created the conditions which made Japan desperate and led to the attack on Pearl Harbor. Of course, that doesn't remove any guilt from the Japanese for bombing Pearl Harbor and killing the people that died in Pearl Harbor, but there's no doubt that, you know, it didn't come out of the blue. It came out of a long series of actions that the United States had taken against Japan. Now, as far as the 9/11 goes, there's no question but that the people who committed the acts of 9/11 were engaging in terrorist action. Taking the lives of innocent people is not something that can be defended at all. That I was talking about nonviolent direct action to rectify social evils, and of course what happened in 9/11 was not nonviolent direct action, but a violent act. But it also ought to be understood that when people commit violent acts, you have to examine what they do in order to understand their motives, to understand what are the grievances behind the violent acts. so that you don't condone the violent acts. We don't condone what happened on 9/11. But at the same time, we have to look at the roots of anger against the United States. And the roots are clear. The roots are American policy in the world, American aggression, American support of the dictators around the world, American invasion of Afghanistan, American invasion of Iraq, American support of Israeli policy. You have to understand that in order to try to intelligently get behind the terrorists' actions and understand how we might prevent terrorism in the future. The only way we can do it is, you know, not by whatever security measures we use around our ships and airports and so on. That is not going to do it. We have to basically change the policies that infuriate so many people in the world and that lead to terrorism. And what Bush did was to use 9/11 not to change our policy, but to do the opposite, to continue our policy, to, in fact, to enhance our policy. A policy that already was an aggressive policy became even more aggressive. Instead of trying to figure out what we could do to help people in the Middle East and to change the policies that hurt them, what the Bush administration did was to make war on people in the Middle East, to bomb innocent people in Afghanistan, to bomb innocent people in Iraq. And the fact that we got rid of the Taliban, or at least temporarily, I might say, or we got rid of Saddam Hussein, it really doesn't justify the fact that we killed huge numbers of innocent people in the process. So 9/11 was used by the Bush administration to expand American power in the Middle East and in the world. Used to further an aggressive policy and to justify what the Bush administration had wanted to do even before 9/11, and that is to establish more American military and economic power in the Middle East. Well, I guess that's the last question.
Yes, to Professor, as a matter of fact, and we at the People Speak are very proud to have had you on our show, sir, and we again would like to thank you, and perhaps we can entice you to come on at another time. I'm sure there are going to be plenty of events real soon that will need response, and we're hoping that you can help us get the message out. When the people speak, we make a difference. Professor Zinn, if you'll stay with us for just a moment when we, as soon as I end the show. Thank you all for coming. Please come back next Wednesday night, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, on Pal Talk, the forum, as well as CWRN, Cosmic Wave Radio Network. We will be interviewing Michael Berg, who is the father of Nick Berg, the young man that died violently in Iraq, and he has some very interesting things to tell us about. Thank you all very much for coming, and we will be ending our show with our song tonight. Thank you very much.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the city fall, by the relief of the dust, and a storm of people, and they stood there hungry.